One,
two,
three,
four.
Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster
movie.
Fun time,
go!
Monster movie.
Fun time, go!
With Precious D and Honey Bee.
Fun time, go!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and neighbors, welcome to Monster Movie Funtime Go and our long-awaited Young Gary episode, also known as Reptilian. I'm one of your hosts, Precious D.
And I'm the other one of your hosts, Honey Bee.
Honey Bee and I are two best friends making our way through the history of kaiju movies, and this week we have to backtrack for one that got left off. But I was, well, we'll get to that in a minute. First, Honeybee, I got a package in the mail today.
Oh, did you?
A big fat Kickstarter package.
Hey-o!
It's the Monsterverse limited edition collector's comic book hardback thing. Legends of the Monsterverse, it's called.
Ooh.
And it came, I think there was lower tiers than what I got. Because mine comes in a slipcase with like a little magnetic flap that closes on it. And it's made to look like kind of a file case.
Oh, cool.
You know, like a one of those little accordion ones that would.
Yeah, yeah.
And have a bunch of papers in it. But it also, I also got a t-shirt and a metal bookmark and a sticker. And a set of patches. I was just saying to our guest last week that I need a new jacket just for patches I get with Kickstarters.
Hell yeah.
I will post pictures of all that stuff on our Instagram when we're done here. So I don't know if this is going to be available for purchase outside of the Kickstarter. I'm not sure. It's Legendary Comics. So I think that's just their own. I guess the Legendary Films has their own comic company now.
Dang.
Yeah, I don't see any other, like, IDW or any of that on here. So, there you go. Anyway, it's a really big book. It's, I don't know how many pages. 400, 500? It's a big, big fat book. So, there you go. So, that may or may not be available for sale to the general public now. I don't remember. What they said they were going to do. These are several like sequel and prequel and bridging comics that they've published over the years, all collected into one volume.
Fuck yeah.
So I was listening. So what we're watching, we're watching a real piece of shit today. It is a South Korean movie, but not so as you notice.
Yeah, only the first opening music would make you kind of think that. And that's Ooh. It.
Well, all the Koreans are on the other side of the camera. Everybody in front of the camera is white. This film, if you're looking for it on Tubi or Pluto or Amazon Prime, might be listed as Reptilian. Or if you search for Yongari with two J's, it might
G's.
Take you to this.
Two G's.
I was listening back to our episode of Yongari with one G, and we mentioned in that episode this remake, so we knew it was happening, but somehow it fell off of our list. So that's why we're backtracking to 1999 to pick it up. And it was released in South Korea in 1999, and then an alternate cut was released with altered plot, new footage, and updated special effects in 2001. Sorry, January 20, 2001, as Yongari 2001 Upgrade Edition, and was distributed in North America as Reptilian. But everybody in the movie calls him Yongari, not Reptilian, so I don't know why they bothered changing the title. It's stupid. this is all from Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. Now, I think that original cut is now considered lost. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this is, if you're watching it on Prime or whatever, I think you're watching the 2001 version.
Yeah.
And it was considered the most expensive South Korean film produced at the time of its release. So I don't know how shitty every other South Korean film is, or if they just don't do special effects movies.
Well, I think the movie had so much potential to be good, but then the special effects just kind of dicked it.
They are terrible. They are terrible. It's all CGI. I think I read somewhere here that they had built a suit and then didn't use it. They did it CGI instead.
And they should have. They should have used it.
Yeah. Now, well, it just says here that the 99 version has never been released on home video in any market. So that this summary is based on the 2001 version. Let's see here. The director is Shim Hyung Ray. Screenplay by Park Hui-jun, and it is 90 minutes. And the budget is $13.5 million United States dollars. Don't know what the box office, if any, was. And I guess that includes this updated version. Ugh, I'm really curious what it looked like before. Our cast is Harrison Young as Dr. Wendell Hughes, Donna Phillipson as Holly Davis, Richard B. Livingston as Dr. Campbell, Bryant Wells as Parker, Brad Sergi as Bud Black, Willie Pickett as Lieutenant O'Neill, Dan Cashman as General George Murdoch, Dennis Howard as General Jack Thomas, Matt Landers as General Howell, Bruce Cornwall as Stanley Mills, Johanna Parker as Sergeant Raminsky, Alex Walters as Sergeant Michaels, Carl Calhoun as Sergeant Andrews, Derek Costa as Sergeant Archie, Les Brandt as Sergeant Sanchez. Oh, look, there's one non-white dude in here. Alan Grifka as Sergeant Smitty, and Marvin Poole as Private Lewis. At least his character is Hispanic. I don't know about the actor, Les Brandt. I don't know about that. So, yeah, not only are there no Koreans in this cast, there is just a big old pile of white bread mayonnaise in this cast.
White
honeybee,
bread
what are
mayonnaise.
Your...
Oh my gosh.
What are your thoughts, your opening thoughts on Reptilian?
I honestly think that this movie really had the potential to be good. There were so many things in this movie that just make it classic. We had so many toys. I love the toys in this film. We have aliens. We have just like all of this shit to, you know, we have like Kong moments, swiping planes out of the air. There's all of these really great things. We did have some shade about Godzilla in this movie, which we've talked about before, is like not okay if your movie sucks, but
yeah.
But yeah, it just like, I felt, before you ever see the kaiju, like I felt like it was going pretty well. Okay, you know, like, oh, And then when the kaiju arrive, everything just goes to shit. I mean, and of course, it wasn't like amazing, like, oh, this is going to be a great movie. I just felt like it really did have the potential to be a good kaiju film. And then the special effects just really, really fucked that up for me. I feel like if it was a man in a suit, it would have been 10 times better. I mean, yeah, I do see the potential in this movie. I'm definitely glad we went back to it. I did enjoy watching it, but oof, man, what an eyesore.
I'm not as forgiving of this film as you are. I really hated it. And I ended up watching it twice.
Oh, no.
Because when I thought we were going to record this a few weeks ago, I go to look at the plot and I was like, none of this sounds familiar. I just watched this a few weeks ago, but I guess I got to watch it again. So
oh my
I
gosh.
Did.
You blocked it out. You hated it so much you just blocked it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I went back and I'm like, I don't think this has anything to do with the original film. So I went back and listened to our episode and I'm like, oh yeah, right. There was that and that and that. And none of that is in here. And it's just the monster design.
It's a very loose remake.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing has kind of happened with some versions of Kong and some versions of Godzilla where they really redo the plot quite a bit, but still.
Yeah, but those movies are good.
The thing is, even in like Godzilla 98, even though they put it in New York, well, it's still nuclear testing that is responsible for the lizard being there, not aliens or, you know, a dimensional portal or mole people or something. It's, you know, still the basic premise is there. This just seemed to depart a lot more from the source material than some of the other ones.
It definitely did.
You know, Kong Skull Island is quite a bit different from King Kong, but we still have, he's living on an island and some people show up and run into him. They don't drag him back to New York and put him on Broadway, but, you know, he's still on his island. But this is, all right, let's get into our plot from Wikipedia. Thank you, Wikipedia. In Southeast Asia, Dr. Campbell and Dr. Hughes lead an archaeological party exploring caverns. Hughes is separated and finds an alien corpse with a fossilized diamond, while Campbell uncovers hieroglyphics leading to the location of a dinosaur skeleton. 2 years later, somebody gets killed though, right? Doesn't the diamond
And then only Hughes is presumed dead. Apparently, Campbell is the only one who survives it, we think. This is like an explosion.
Right.
And Campbell, you know, gets this, like, tablet of hieroglyphics and thinks that Hughes is dead. And 2 years later, here we are.
Yeah. 2 years later, an alien mothership arrives near Earth's orbit and destroys two American satellites that get the attention of Soldier Parker, who reports it to General Murdoch of the United National Defense Agency. Bud Black, a photojournalist, learns about a dinosaur dig led by Campbell and his assistant, Holly. And Campbell is really hostile towards this reporter at first, but then totally wants to bring him on board. He's just really weird. This guy's a real weirdo.
Yeah, he really is. And also, the Bud Black character, it was like driving me crazy. He doesn't do this the whole movie, and I don't know why he's doing it in the beginning, like when he's first introduced, but he's like, it seems like he's like squinting to try to like make his character like maybe tougher or something. I don't know, but I'm like, why are you squinting? Stop fucking squinting. He eventually stops doing it. I was like, is it the shape of his eyes? Like, what is he doing? But it seems to be like he's always just like making this facial expression where he's just like squinting. Like, I can't even explain it, but his eye, it's like, open your eyes. He finally, like in the middle of the movie, decides that he's not going to do the squinting thing anymore. And I was like, okay, thank God. But also, then I also knew that he was like making this weird face. I'm like, why are you making this face? Why? Why?
There's also this weirdness with him getting the assignment, where his editor gets a call about it. He's in bed with a woman. I guess it's his wife. And then is like plotting. He's like, aha, I'm going to give this assignment to Bud Black and he will screw it up and then I'll have him where I want him and I can get rid of him. And I'm like, what? So he calls him and gives him the assignment. And then that just gets thrown away. We never revisit that. There's never anything with the editor getting mad at him or being pleasantly surprised that he's actually uncovered something or anything. It was just completely unnecessary.
It's like this build up to, so like you get some sort of like character development from him. So you know like what kind of guy he is, but it doesn't work. None of it works. It doesn't help. It's just all very annoying.
It's totally unnecessary.
Opinion.
And he can just show up at the dig. We don't need this setup of him getting the assignment.
Yeah.
So the script needed an editor. Anyway, moving on. Hughes, who had been believed to be dead, arrives at the dig site to warn Campbell about the dinosaur's resurrection, but is quickly removed from the site.
And he actually says, in this moment, he actually says, Yongary. Like, he knows. He already, we find out in this moment, like, he knows all the shit, I guess, from the 2 years that he's been presumed dead. But I was just like, oh, damn, like, no mystery here. We know who it is. We know what's coming.
Yeah. And is this where there's an accident?
Yes. There's well, it's that night, like, some, later on that
worker,
night.
A worker has an accident, and Campbell's just a, you know... He's just evil about it. He's like, well, I'll pay you all more if you get back to work. And then I think that works. But then again, they want to quit later because something else happens. And he's like, look, you're all illegals and I'm going to report you all to ICE if you don't get back to work. And I'm like, ugh, what a dick. And he just seems to be needlessly mean to numerous people in a way that doesn't actually further the plot, because the stuff that goes wrong actually has nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
It's not caused by him and it's not done to him directly or anything. So he's just being evil just to be evil.
Yeah. And we also find out
his cause.
Right. We find out, like, during this accident or whatever, that it's, like, the third accident in the past week, which causes Holly to resign because she's like, man, fuck this guy. Like, why is he such a douchebag?
And then goes to a bar to talk to the bartender about how what men are like or something, or...
Yeah, this bartender
situation was so nice to talk to another woman. Has been nothing but... Yeah, she's telling him how, oh, I've just been surrounded by men lately. And the bartender's like, oh, that sounds all right to me. And she's like, no, you don't understand this. Archaeological dig, just an asshole, and a bunch of guys that I didn't bother talking to because they're Hispanic or something. I don't know. Or South. Well, I guess they're in Southeast Asia, I suppose. But she goes into an American bar? I'm not sure this movie knows where it took place.
Yeah, everything seemed American to me except for the opening music. I forgot after the opening music that this was even like a South Korean film.
Yeah. Anyway, the fucking spaceship sends beams to reanimate the dinosaur, killing several diggers, which apparently they couldn't do until it got dug up and laid out for them, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
And... when this happens, so they got the bones there, but then the beam, I guess, you know, covers it in flesh and whatever, and it gets up and starts stomping around. And fucking Campbell, or is this later? No, it's not. Let's see. Holly confronts Campbell about the mysterious deaths and quits after Campbell refuses to launch an investigation. Hughes finds Holly and reveals to her about the legend of Yongari, the alien fossil, additional hieroglyphics, and that he was held by the U.S. government as a guest for the last 2 years. She initially dismisses his claims, but comes around after he shows her classified data concerning the alien fossil. They return to the dig to stop Campbell, but arrive too late when the alien ship fully resurrects Yongari. Okay, so I guess they zap it twice? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the first time they zap it, it's like his bones start growing, and then remember his teeth, like, shoot out? Which was kind of cool. His, like, teeth, like, fly out of the ground and, like, return to his jaw and, like, kill somebody. That was probably, like, my favorite death in the film. And then, like, after that, the whole bar thing happens, like, after that. And then, then once they return back to the site, her and Campbell, then the fossils and stuff start to become reborn. The dinosaur becomes reborn to destroy the world.
And then it says here, fully resurrects Yongari, killing Campbell in the process. But this was so... because Campbell starts yelling at it. He's kind of excited, but then he's like, hey, I created you. I'm like, no, you did not.
No, you didn't.
You just dug him up. All you did was dig him up. You didn't zap him with the ray. You didn't do any science at it. You did not create him.
Yeah, he stomps his ass.
And Yongari knows, like, this because it steps on him.
Yeah.
Yongari totally kills him.
And then this part was crazy to me. Like, he steps on the guy and, like, a few of the coworkers, and then the spaceship just zaps him into...
Yep.
Away. Like, it just, like, zaps
him. Yeah, beams him up.
Yeah.
Well, it says here, the alien ship dematerializes Yongari, But it doesn't, I guess it can just hold him in a buffering pattern or something, because we don't see him then appear on the ship or anything. But they can zap him back down later when they need to. Both Holly and Hughes are taken into custody by Parker. Young Gary is then teleported before them and escape before a helicopter squadron engages Yongri in battle. Oh, right, right. It appears right in front of them.
Uh-huh.
And the guy gets out to shoot at it with his little pistol, and they escape.
I do like the footprint part where, like, he's like, oh, yeah, you guys dig that footprint? You fucking weirdos. And they're like, no, you gotta listen to us. We didn't do it. It's real. And he's like, okay, right, sure it is.
And he's also like, oh, if you want to talk about top secret shit, it's fine. What happens in the Jeep stays in the Jeep. Like, all right, you weirdo. Yongri, let's see, helicopter squadron engages Yongri in battle, only to be defeated.
The National Space Investigation. Yeah, because he spits fireballs.
That's right. Not like a dragon fire, but just sort of discreet little balls of fire. It's The National Space Investigation Agency sends Stanley Mills to share information regarding the aliens with General Murdoch and General Howell. So these generals, I think that there's three of them all together. There is just this tiny little room, very dark. I don't think we can even see the walls. Just, you know, it's their military headquarters, but it is just, you know, a cheap soundstage with a few desks and a map and some computers. And these guys seem to be from like three different branches of the military.
Yeah.
But one of them ought to be an admiral, but nobody calls him admiral, but it seems like one of them should be an admiral. But none of them have matching uniforms, so they must be from different branches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's like the National Space Investigation Agency, so.
Yeah. So, which they've never heard of, because it's super secret. I'm like, I don't think even the White House knows we exist. I'm like, well, then what authority are you operating under? Is there a congressional subcommittee that's funding you? Who do you answer to? And why should I answer to you?
Who do you work for? And in this part, what the guy, what's his face, admits that he knew that this would happen for like the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And didn't tell anybody.
Well, they heard about it 6 months ago, but it's also millions of years old. So why would they think that this prophecy from millions of years ago would come to pass in the next 6 months? I mean, I do think that is fair. Like, well, how would we, you know, this message has been here for a long time. How did we know it was going to kick in 6 months from then? There's also a part in here somewhere where they bring in a couple of these sergeants and introduce them to people, and somebody says to the lady, Sergeant, what is your mission? Like they're questioning Conan. Like, Conan, what is good in life? And she's all like, my mission is to kill the enemy and break their toys, sir. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. What the fuck's wrong with you? She's just being super military. Ah, military, kill everybody, break their toys. I'm like, you know, you're about to be fighting a kaiju. It's not going to... Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
All she does is look at computer screens and yell out stuff, and, you know, and the other guy as well. They're not actually engaging the enemy.
Yeah.
Let's see. Where were we?
We're about to send Yongri to Los Angeles.
Mills explains that a paleontologist provided the NSIA with scientific evidence that an alien civilization visited the Earth 200 million years ago. And that vital information in defeating the aliens was stolen. Mills recommends to capture the aliens alive, but Hal wishes to destroy them. Yongri is then teleported to Los Angeles and proceeds to attack. The aliens just seem to want to soften us up first, but, I mean, you were here 200 million years ago. You're coming back now. Why exactly? None of that's explained.
Just upon aliens arriving, doing alien shit.
Yeah.
Misusing science.
That's right, fuckers. Upon arriving at the UNDA base, Hughes and Holly are confronted by Mills, who reveals that Hughes was the paleontologist who shared his discoveries and later stole information from their lab. Hughes counters that he warned the NSIA, but chose to ignore him. That sentence was not phrased properly. Mills attempts to take the stolen data disk back, but fails and is detained. The U.S. president, who we do not see on screen, gives the UNDA 5 hours to defeat Yongri or he will launch a nuclear strike. You'd think
and
a president
then, poof,
would be a little more hesitant.
He's gone again. Yeah, well, I mean...
Murdoch orders General Thomas to dispatch... Oh, these guys. Murdoch orders General Thomas to dispatch his experimental Project T forces led by Parker to attack Yongri. These fuckers.
Jetpacks! Laser cannon!
They're all... Yeah, they're in a helicopter, and there's almost this patent moment where one of them is like, I can't do it, sir. But he doesn't slap him like General Patton did. He just takes his big gun and gives it to somebody else. And these guys all, this should have been so awesome, but it just wasn't.
I know.
These clowns have
jetpacks. I feel like that's how the whole movie was. Like, it could have been so good, but it just wasn't.
They have laser rifles and jetpacks, but they just look like shit.
Absolute
dog shit. Yeah, that
should
have been really great. A bunch of rocketeers shooting lasers at a kaiju should have been awesome, but it just looked lame.
And right before this, also, we find out that Yongri has, like, some sort of force field around him, which is why the missile's guidance systems don't work and why he keeps dodging huge missiles being shot at him.
Right.
So come on, jetpacks and laser cannons. Yeah.
Oh, God. They do so much more damage to the city than he does because he just keeps ducking and their missiles run straight into buildings. Hughes and Holly decode the additional hieroglyphics and uncover that the aliens are controlling Yongri through a diamond-shaped receptor in his forehead. Jesus. And that another great light will be sent to do battle. This is such bullshit. Because they're like translating it and they say something about the demon. And then they realize, oh, wait,
Damon.
It means diamond.
Yeah.
The daemon. Oh, it's really diamond. And I'm like, no, these are hieroglyphics. They're not English words that kind of sound like other English words. That's not how hieroglyphics work. And it would probably just, if they meant a diamond in his head, there would just be a symbol that looked like a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he has this diamond-shaped spot on his forehead, so they figure out to shoot him there. Jesus Christ. Failing to defeat Yongri in time, the president sends a bomber to kill Yongri to the delight of Mills. The T-forces manage to break the alien's control over Yongri. Mills tries to convince Murdoch to kill him, but is ignored, which forces Mills to jam the UNDA's radars unless they let him leave. Mills fails and is arrested. The aliens send a new monster, Psycor, to battle Yongri. So now that his shooting him in the diamond actually just broke their control of him, really.
Yeah, and then, like, as soon as his control is broken, Yongri starts, like, fucking saving people. Like, he saves, like, a group of people from a building.
Does he actually catch somebody? Yeah.
Yeah.
So they send the other monster to fight him. Psycor initially gets the upper hand, but Yongri emerges victorious in the end, forcing the aliens to flee. The generals manage to stop the bomber at the last minute. God, this was also just, I'm like, they're trying to create some tension here at the end. Oh, no, the bomber's coming. It's going to drop the nuclear weapon. Oh, no. Hey, bomber, can you hear me? I'm closing in on the target. Hey, can you hear me? Because you want to get that double confirmation before you drop the nuclear bomb. So there's definitely going to be a double check. I'm sure in real life there is some kind of approaching the target. Do you confirm that I should drop this nuclear bomb on this city? Yes, I confirm. Do you confirm again? Yes, I double confirm. Cross my heart and hope to die. Drop the bomb. But they do manage to get through the static in time to keep him from bombing Los Angeles. And the following morning, the UNDA transports Yongri to a deserted island where he can live in peace. They just fucking Kong lift him up by helicopters.
Yeah, they do.
At least they didn't use balloons.
True. But we got to talk about
And there's one
Yongri.
Point when the old guy...
Go ahead.
Sorry. There's one point where the old guy pats the younger doctor... He's like, good, Holly. He's like, good job, Holly. I guess it's because she decoded the diamond. It just seemed like he was giving a little more congratulations than either of them had coming. But I guess she did figure out to shoot him in the diamond, I guess, is what the good job that she did.
Yeah. Well, something really cool from the fight between Sycor and Yongeri is Yongeri like decapitates Sycor with a fireball, and then he kind of like stumbles, but then he just like stands up and these like tentacles come out of his face, and he just like keeps coming, and then he shoots another fireball at him and is like blown to pieces. But it was so cool. That was one part where I was like, I mean, it looks like shit because of the CGI is just garbage, but I did like that there was a kaiju battle in this movie and that they did some shit to make it cooler than just, you know, two big monsters wrestling, because they weren't in suits so they could do anything. But I did like how Sycor like came back and he had like tentacles like coming out of his the hole where his head used to be. That was really cool.
Well, it says here that they got support from the Korean government and allowed them to access to military bases, hardware, and locations such as the Historic War Museum in Seoul, a location where filming was had never been permitted before.
Something else
that for this piece of crap
that we have to mention about this piece of crap is at one point someone is like, "Oh, this monster makes Godzilla look like a pussy," and I was like, yes. "Excuse you?"
That's Parker, I believe.
Like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. And he didn't. He didn't.
Not at all. Not even a little bit.
He certainly visually doesn't, but as far as just the amount of havoc that he wreaks, no, he didn't make Godzilla look like a pussy. You've never seen a Godzilla movie, you goddamn idiot.
Obviously.
You guys are the ones wrecking the city with your stray missiles. Ugh.
Seriously. And then I did see too, and I was like just kind of reading up on this movie, that in China, when this movie was released in 2001 in China, that the title was Resurrection of Godzilla. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, no.
I think I saw way back in looking into one of the Frankenstein movies or something, that there was a tendency to release movies in other countries like Germany and China and whatever, and just slap either Frankenstein or Godzilla on movies that really had nothing to do with either of those characters.
Yeah.
So that makes some sense. And I don't think China is part of our international copyright and trademark agreements. I think they tend to ignore those. So, yeah, they wouldn't hesitate to just call it Godzilla if that was going to get more butts in seats. Oh, my gosh.
I was offended.
So, Honey Bien. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Reptilian Yongeri?
It made me laugh, like, when the aliens are first shown on screen and they're just like, hey Bill, hey, what's up, like the aliens just like spoke perfect English and like didn't even try to like do anything alien-ish, you know. I was like, wow, okay, great. But yeah, I mean, I just felt like it had so much potential to be a good movie and it just really wasn't.
I didn't feel it had any potential. I thought it was just just crap through and through.
Oh my gosh. Nothing, I did love the toys. I love the toys in this movie. There are so many minis in this movie. And
yeah, I think it said there was 124 miniatures.
Oh my gosh.
And the designer spent 6 months designing Yongeri. Sculptures of the monster were made in 6 months, which were then scanned to digital screens for 3D work. Suits were produced for the monsters, but were replaced with computer-generated imagery during post-production. So I wonder if they actually filmed those scenes with the suits and then pasted the CGI over top of them. That's a shame.
I don't know.
I'd like to get a hold of the original footage.
Seriously. Because the thing is that, like, when we first started watching these movies, and I hadn't really seen a lot of, like, suit actor type movies, I was like, okay, this is, like, kind of silly. And, like, but now, as we've gotten so far into it, I really love it. And then seeing this, I was like, yeah, okay, we need to go back to the suits, my boy. Like, this is just trash.
This was a year after the American Godzilla came out, and the computer graphics are just nowhere near the level that they were in that movie.
Not
it's just
even.
Embarrassing.
It
it's more like 1992 than 99. It's just, it's pathetic. So yeah, I did not care for that at all. Honeybee, what are you going to rate Young Gary the Reptilian?
Man, I think I'm going to give it 2.5 stars. I did like some of the new design of Young Gary in comparison to like his original design. It was very different. Like maybe the only thing that's kind of similar is like the spike on his nose, which is, I don't know. I'm going to say 2.5 just because I did like enjoy watching it, but for the wrong reasons. And yeah, it was pretty much garbage, but there was so much in it that I did really love, like the toys. It did make me laugh at certain points when it also probably shouldn't have been, but yeah, I'm going to say 2.5. What about you?
One star. and even that, I think that is being generous.
You can give it a half a star if you want.
I probably should, but I'll go ahead and give it one. Oh, goodness gracious.
I am glad we went back. I am for sure glad we did it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We need to be complete.
Yeah.
So, it's on either Pluto or Tubi and on
Prime.
Amazon Prime, if you feel the need to watch it.
It's also on YouTube, but I think you might have to have, like, the YouTube membership to watch it. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Next week, we will be finishing off the Millennium Era. And I guess finishing this season, I mean, we'll start the next season just right away, the next week. But we've kind of been breaking our seasons into eras rather than number of episodes. So Godzilla Final Wars is next week's movie.
Woo-wee!
So that is the final in the Millennium Era. And let me just double check this. Godzilla Final Wars. Ends the Millennium Era, and that is, I don't know, where's that streaming, Honeybee? just knocking Coke cans over here.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, it was a Coke can.
That's funny. Let's see, Godzilla Final Wars is streaming on Pluto. You can see it on YouTube. It is on, it's free on Pluto. You have to rent it from YouTube. And Prime and Apple. So, yeah, Pluto. Pluto's where you can watch it for free. Unless you want to spend $3. Right. And then you can watch it other places.
I mean, I own it both on Fandango at home. Fuck you. And physical copy. I might even have 2 physical copies. I'm not sure.
Nice.
Maybe just, I know I had a, I think I had a DVD at one point, but now I have just on Blu-ray. Anyway, there you go, folks. Watch that for next week. I'm going to go read this comic book here and post on Instagram about it.
Hell yeah.
And that'll do it for now. Until next time, I have been Precious D.
And I have been Honey Bee.
Remember to keep calm and take shelter in basements.
And please don't misuse science.
We won't see you, but you will hear us next time on Monster Movie Funtime Go. You've been listening to Monster Movie Funtime Go. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is by the Texacato Folk Rock Punk featuring Lita Lopez. You can support the show, find links to our social media, and even leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/mmftg.